meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in. This is Wednesday, so you got Father Tom Coy's going to wrinkle your brain a little bit here. I'm recording this during Holy Week. Therefore, our attention and our thoughts should be on the great passion, death, and resurrection of the Lord. I can't help but want to share with you I'm going to focus on the trial before Pilate in the passion narrative. And I'm going to use a great deal from a wonderful book called To Know Christ Jesus by F.J. Sheed. It's not Sheen like Fulton Sheen, though Fulton Sheen also has a wonderful, wonderful book on the life of Christ. This is Sheed was a friend of Chesterton, actually. He moved to England from Australia and converted to Catholicism. I do appreciate and like to share some of the great insights that those who embrace and come to Catholicism through a kind of intellectual pursuit of truth, an intellectual journey that satisfies the quest for the right religion, the true religion, oftentimes because a religion that they started with seems so faulty, seems too full of holes, the Swiss cheese approach to religion. Not that you cannot find problems with Catholicism, but in a search for the true religion, you can't do better than Catholicism, and it attracts folks. It holds water more than any other. I'll just say it like that. Anyways, so when I think of the trial before Pilate in the passion narratives, the chapter called Trial by Pontius Pilate in To Know Christ Jesus, it tries to bring together all the details that are in the four Gospels. They're different approaches. Well, I'll just read here what he says. That all four evangelists give their own account of the trial by Pontius Pilate. As in their account of what followed the arrest, each gives a brief summary only, omitting a vast amount, selecting the things that seem to him, Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, the most necessary to tell. Concerned with what was said and done, but not so very much with the order and order of the saying and doing. So there may be a little inconsistency about exactly what happened first, second, and all that, but there are the basic facts are the same in all four Gospels. I want to use that amazing, I think it's a very good presentation of the trial before Pilate. in that 1917 rock opera we'd all, those of us who grew up way back when, called Jesus Christ Superstar. I'm amazed that it fell out of use. It fell out of popularity. It's kind of making a comeback because there was a remake of it and with new cast and pretty much the same words, lyrics to all the songs that may have had a little different emphasis on the music in one way or another. But anyways, it had a powerful effect in my life, and I think a lot of the folks that were coming of age in the 70s, I'm going to have to say that it had a great deal of effect on my vocation. It emphasized the humanity of Jesus deeply, and it did lead you into the story of Jesus. Even though I loved reading the scriptures about it, the power of that rock opera, they called it. Some of the songs are kind of weird. Some of the type of music was rock and roll, you know. And I wasn't a really big fan of the heavy rock and roll, though rock and roll of the 70s, 60s and 70s had to give way to acid rock or even harder rock and roll. And so to listen to some of the acid rock or whatever term you would want to use it, gave way. But it was born out of that rock and roll of the 60s and 70s. So I did prefer reading it straight from the Gospels itself. But the presentation in that rock opera of the humanity of Christ. And as I say, now as I look back on it, I want to share some of it with you because I think it does get the trial between Jesus and Pilate pretty well accurate to the Gospels, and it especially highlights the reason I'm drawn in it. Into that special part of the Triduum is that it really is the height of the problem of the relationship between church and state. If you're a regular listener to Wednesday, Brain Wrinkling Wednesdays with yours truly, Father Coys, you know that this theme of the relationship between church and state is a big one in my book, and I trust in yours. It should be. Anyways, do you remember this is how, let's see, it goes like this.
And so the king is once again my guest. And why is this? Was Herod unimpressed?
We turn to Rome to sentence Nazareth. We have no law to put a man to death. We need him crucified. It's all you have to do. We need him crucified. It's all you have to do.
So that's what we'll get back to that. But of course, if you're a child of the 70s like myself, you'll remember that dramatic presentation of the Passion and all. Again, once again, I always have to say Jesus Christ Superstar, written by Jewish writers, leaves off the great end of the story, the resurrection. And it's kind of an important part of the story. But okay, separate that from the fact of, are you trying to understand the Passion of our Lord? Why was he crucified? What was at stake, as it were? And in order to appreciate what was at stake, here's what I want to do. I want to share with you another thing of the news I saw. This is more contemporary. And it has to do with the issue of church versus state. It's a story from Oregon, the state of Oregon, in the northwest part of the United States, of course. And it's a story of how the state is trying to control religious people, especially those religious people that are doing what a lot of people are doing by growing their own food and having like a little farm, having some chickens to get some eggs, having some couple of cows to have milk and butter and all the rest. There's a kind of a sense of independence, and if you can't get enough food at the store, you're going to depend on yourself. It's a phenomenon that is growing. And here's the little episode. It's from a website or a channel. What's it called? It's called Yanasa TV. Yanasa, Y-A-N-A-S-A. Yanasa TV. So here's the story. It goes like farms. This.
And what they're doing in the state of Oregon is they've redefined what a CAFO is. And this doesn't just apply to small dairy farmers. This applies to people who have chicken houses, who have goat farms, basically anybody who has a barn or a facility that has a gravel or concrete floor. I will actually read to you what the definition is, and then we'll talk about how it's been impacting some people.
Okay, he used the phrase CAFO, C-A-F-O. It's a confined animal feeding organization, organization, I think. He's going to mention that, or so. So it's a move by the state to make this trend of individuals, small farmers, you could call them, to take away their livelihood, to cause havoc to these people. A lot of those people tend to be more evangelical Christian types, and there are Catholic types as well, but especially out there in Oregon, there's a lot of Protestant denominations, and those shall we say free thinking, God loving, Bible thumping Christians sense the difficulties with the relationship with the government and the state, so they're trying to be a little fly under the radar, which is, you know, something we often contemplate. Anyways, so here, remember, this is, I want you to think about this issue in terms of the trial of Jesus before Pilate and the great issue of the relationship between church and state. Here he goes on again.
According to Oregon, a CAFO, or a confined animal feeding operation, CAFO. The state of Oregon defines CAFOs as the concentrated feeding or holding of animals or poultry, including but not limited to a horse, cattle, sheep, or swine feeding areas, dairy confinement areas, and poultry and egg production facilities where the surface has been prepared with concrete, rock, or fibrous material to support animals in wet weather. That is what they define as a CAFO. And so what's happening in Oregon, and why the small dairies have filed a lawsuit against the state, and really I think from the list that you just heard me read, anybody who's producing eggs, it doesn't matter the size of the operation. You could have two milking cows. Okay, so here's an example for you. Sarah King, who owns Godspeed Hollow Farm in Newburg, Oregon, has a pickup station that's just 100 feet in length.
Did you hear the name of her little farm? Godspeed. Sounds like a Christian type person, doesn't it? Again, we have to be aware that there is this movement, there is this fear of Christians that are not cooperating so much with the state. That's why this little we can take a whole bunch of other examples in order to really appreciate the power and the intensity, the importance of the life of Christ and the drama that's unfolding before us. It goes on.
She has an 11-acre property and keeps things pretty simple. She has 3 milking cows. She's been shut down for being called a CAFO. But because she has that milking stand, the state of Oregon said, you are a CAFO. And because you are considered a CAFO, we require you to put in this infrastructure improvement, which would cost her $100,000, she could never do with a couple cows. We're requiring this massive infrastructure upgrade for you to continue to operate your facilities to protect our groundwater from your 2 cows standing on a milking stand.
Okay, did you get that there? They're requiring the small farmer to install the kind of feeding stand that a large farm, corporate farm, would have. If you have 200 or 300 cows, you're going to have a big barn facility, and you put the floor in one way or another, or a gravel floor, and it's directed. The stated reason they're attacking the small Christian farmer is because we're trying to protect our groundwater, the groundwater, the table of water that we all need and use. So we can't have the acid draining into the dirt and or the urine that the cows would expel and going down into the earth and contaminating our water. So there's the government and the state doesn't want to say we're a little upset at you because of your Christian principles. We're going to try to find a way around attacking your theology, your moral outlook, your metaphysical outlook, namely heaven, hell. Of course, Catholics would add purgatory, and I wish all Protestants would add purgatory, but many of them haven't seen the logic of that yet. But this is something, keep this in mind as then we go to the trial between Jesus and Pilate. How to know who Pilate was as a representative of the state and know who the Sanhedrin was as the representatives of church. But Jesus trying to purify the church or purify what religion is, should be. The Sanhedrin is going to have to try an end around. They don't want to attack his theology outright. They're going to try to attack him by getting Pontius Pilate to do the dirty work of eliminating a threat to their political power by saying that Jesus is also a threat to Pilate's political power. Are you following me? I'm going to read a little bit more from Sheed's book, To Know Christ Jesus. After this break, let's take our first break. I'm Father Tom Coyes on The Winds of Change on AM 750.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, invites you to journey with Christ here at St. Stan's during the Holy Triduum, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Easter Sunday. Visit ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org for the complete schedule of Triduum worship. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
For 150 years, St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy has been an oasis that builds a moral foundation for your child based upon Catholic faith, virtue, and valor, along with strong academic preparation for children pre-kindergarten through eighth grade. Here's how you can help St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy and have a good time. Come out and play for St. Stan's Academy during the annual Casino Night Fundraiser, Saturday, April 25th at 6 p.m. Enjoy casino games, food, drinks, and great music, all while helping to support St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy, Saturday, April 25th at 6 p.m. Now, you must be 21 or over. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is located at 1255 North Noble in Chicago. That's one block north on Noble, off Division, just off the Kennedy.
Welcome back to The Winds of Change. I'm Father Tom Kois, trying to walk through and really appreciate the major issue of the relationship between church and state by analyzing and really appreciating the details of the trial of Jesus before Pontius Pilate, how the Sanhedrin was trying to use and threaten Pilate, how Pilate was ultimately caving in, as it were, for his own fear, his own self-preservation, as it were. So, and I'm using a wonderful book by F.J. Sheed called To Know Christ Jesus. Here's a little bit more what he writes. Pilate says, exclaims, "Truth," when Jesus answered him, "is that all?" The Roman Empire, especially at its eastern end, was littered with philosophers and sophists, mystics and mystagogues. The Roman civil service was trained to treat them with a sort of contemptuous tolerance. There might even be something in the stuff they were talking about, but nothing that interested practical men, above all, nothing that threatened Roman dominion. And Jesus, whom they wanted him to kill for them, was evidently one of that mystical sorts. So one of the lines in there that really fits in with that Jesus Christ Superstar rendition is when she says that the eastern part of the Roman Empire, where Jerusalem was littered with philosophers and sophists. Jesus, or Pilate, shouts out, you create messiahs by the sackful. So that's a good rendition of the Roman Empire's attitude about these religions. You produce messiahs by the sackful, or at least we don't really pay attention too much to these theological debates, as it were. We're interested in Roman peace and Roman justice. So that's a good line there. Here's, if I play this here, how does it go? This is from Jesus Christ Superstar, of course.
"And so the king is once again my guest. And why is this? Was Herod unimpressed?
We turn to Rome to sentence Nazareth. We have no law to put a man to death. We need him crucified. It's all you have to do. We need him crucified. It's all you have to do.
Talk to me, Jesus Christ. You have been brought here, manacled, beaten by your own people. Do you have a first idea why you deserve it? Listen, King of the Jews, where is your kingdom? Look at me. Am I a Jew?
I have no kingdom. In this world, I'm through.
Talk to me, Jesus Christ!
There may be a kingdom for me somewhere, if you only knew."
I gotta stop that there, because even though it has that sense of Jesus saying, I'm not fighting for a kingdom in this world. It's a little inaccurate. It's not scripturally correct to put on the lips of Jesus that there may be a kingdom for me somewhere. Jesus knew the kingdom, obviously, the kingdom of heaven, and his desire to see that kingdom mimicked, mirrored, established as best as possible in the world. But other than that, it's a good rendition of this dilemma here.
Then you are a king. It's you that say I am. I look for truth and find that I get damned.
Well, what is truth?
Of course, there's another little slip with the scripture. Jesus didn't say, I look for truth and find that I get damned. He said, I am the truth, the way and the truth and the life. So can't expect non-Catholics to get all the theology or they're bending the scriptures a little bit. It's not that popular to consider Jesus as the truth, but it's okay to present him as one looking for the truth. That would make Jesus more of a philosopher or a teacher trying to find the truth and share the truth, right? Rather than be the truth. Jesus Christ Superstar gets it wrong in that sense, but right with the way Caesar reacts to it.
Is truth unchanging law? We both have truths. Are mine the same as yours?
Crucify him! Crucify him!
What do you mean? You'd crucify your king?
We have no king but Caesar!
He's done no wrong. No, not the slightest thing.
We have no king but Caesar. Crucify
Well, this is new. Respect for Caesar. Till now, this has been noticeably lacking.
I think that's a great line where it says, this respect for Caesar, this is something new. Up till now, it's been noticeably lacking. Obviously, Pilate, being the Roman representative, knows that the Jewish people were always fighting. They didn't like Caesar, and he knew that. And so he senses there's something odd about their desire to now make friends with Caesar, if that making friends with Caesar will accomplish their goals. And it's accurate, I really think, to see that Pontius Pilate would have seen the false praise of Caesar wasn't truly praise. And that's what Jesus Christ Superstar gets right here at this junction.
Who is this Jesus? Why is he different? You Jews produce messiahs by the sackful.
There's that line, you Jews produce messiahs by the sackful. That's what Sheed is reminding us in the book here, that the area of Jerusalem, the eastern end of the Roman Empire, was littered with philosophers, sophists, mystics, and mystagogues. Rome was this is very valuable for us to appreciate. Rome, in its anti-Christianity, prided itself in being so tolerant to religions. And if you got to see that, that shows a nobleness in the Roman Empire with its tolerance to religions, which mimics, in a certain sense, the United States of America and our religious tolerance, religious freedom, our doctrine of religious freedom, as long as the state could control those religions. Have as many religions as you want, as long as we're the ultimate authority, as long as we're the ultimate measure of what can or can't happen or be taught, as it were. So that that line right there in Jesus Christ Superstar is a key one, too.
We need him crucified, it's all you have to do. We need him crucified, it's all you have to do.
Talk to me, Jesus Christ. Look at your Jesus Christ. I'll agree, he's mad. Ought to be locked up. But that is not a reason to destroy him.
There, Pontius Pilate is trying to get out of the dirty deed of having to kill Jesus. But she makes a good point here. He's hesitant. Pontius Pilate is hesitant to kill him, not because he doesn't want to kill people. He's ordered massacres. He's executed tons of people, as it were. As a matter of fact, the ordering of some Samaritans was what ultimately gets him dethroned, as it were. Caesar Tiberius, the Roman emperor, does defrock him because he ordered massacres. So she has to say, well, there's got to be a different reason why Pontius Pilate is hesitant to kill. You could say in the most noble way, he's hesitant because he knows that Rome is well known for Roman justice. In other words, we're going to have trials and we're going to not execute people willy-nilly. We're going to be fair about our court system, as it were. So that's part of his hesitancy to kill Jesus. But the other reason is that he's annoyed that he can see the Sanhedrin is using him. Let me read here a little bit. She says, they wanted Caesar to do there the Sanhedrin's dirty work, so he felt he resented it, not because the work was dirty. There was too much blood on his hands for that. What he must have resented was being used as a convenience, above all by the Jewish leaders. He disliked Jews. His patron in Rome, the emperor's minister, Sejanus, was strongly anti-Jew, had in fact been behind the expulsion of Jews from Rome in the year AD 19. Pilate had three major conflicts with the Jewish people. Two of these had been settled in the Judean area where Jerusalem was, with Pilate winning one and forced to yield ignominiously in the other. The third had gone to Tiberius Caesar himself. Pilate again lost and was censured by the terrifying little man in Rome, Tiberius Caesar, talking about. So three times or four, Pilate told the leaders that he could find no case for the death sentence against Jesus. But they kept pressuring him steadily on. We cannot be certain within a year or two of just when Jesus was tried. If it was as late as year 31, Pilate would have had a special reason to avoid the emperor's notice. In October of that year, his patron, the great Sejanus himself, was executed by Tiberius, and many of his friends in Rome committed suicide to avoid such a fate. But even before that, the high priest knew, and Pilate knew that they knew, that he would do a great deal to avoid their reporting him again to Tiberius. So here's a so important to see the strategy of evil forces. And it's the same strategy of the bully on the parking lot. You create a problem so that you can threaten the person. The Sanhedrin was saying, we know that Caesar Tiberius would execute you if you get him mad enough, if you disappoint him enough. And one of the things that disappoints Tiberius Caesar is when Rome is not known as peaceful Rome. We want the Roman Empire to be a peaceful place to live. And so all you do is, in order to destroy the peaceful reputation of a place is to create a riot. And so we can create a riot. We can create a riot there's two ways the riot was going to come up. We can create a riot because we'll have this trial over Jesus, and people will get upset because Jesus had a lot of friends and he was popular. So we'll let him go, and Jesus himself will create the riot. They mistakenly thought that. So kill Jesus and his friends will riot. Don't kill Jesus and Jesus will create the riot. Either way, there's a riot, then the Roman Emperor will be upset with Pontius Pilate because you're destroying something that the Roman Empire cherishes so much, Roman peace, Pax Romano, right? So, you can't help. I got to point out, if you don't see it so clearly, it's the same logic of the riots we saw back in the year, what was it, 2020, where groups of people were upset, that Black Lives Matter crowd, we're creating riots so that they would have attention, and you will give us what we want, or else we'll create more havoc, as it were. And of course, that evil kind of strategy depends on the awareness of the opposition to that riot is operating along moral grounds. In other words, the good guys are not going to take out guns and kill all the people rioting. That's always the choice that maybe the leaders have to make. When will a riot be stopped with guns? And so the rioters are banking on, are gambling on the fact that the powers that be are not going to shoot them. They're just going to put up with them. That's where the police just form a perimeter and like stand down. That's the command so often, right? Stand down. We'll just let them burn the Walgreens or whatever. We're being manipulated, and we're not going to say, all right, police, start firing. And you don't want that. You know, it reminds me of the comic stories of Batman and the Joker or Superman. The bad guys always can do bad things, but the good guys have to operate by moral principles. You know, ever since I was little, I felt the irony of that Superman or Batman would always have to follow the law. They couldn't fight back. They couldn't fight dirty the way the Joker or the Riddler or whatever. They can fight dirty, but Batman and Superman couldn't fight dirty. We're seeing that same kind of thing, that the Sanhedrin here is willing to fight dirty, as it were. Let's take our other break here, and I will continue a little bit more with the trial of Jesus before Pontius Pilate. And I got to bring in a clip from that amazing movie Nefarious, because it puts this trial in a great context too. It brings in even more. So I'm Father Tom Coyce. You are listening to The Winds of Change on AM 750.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, invites you to journey with Christ here at St. Stan's during the Holy Triduum, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Easter Sunday. Visit ststandschurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org for the complete schedule of Triduum worship. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
We are the students of of St. Stanislaus-Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus-Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus-Kostka Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Thanks for listening to the Winds of Change. I'm Father Tom Coys. I'm sharing with you some of the dialogue and the music from Jesus Christ Superstar to dive into the trial of Jesus before Pontius Pilate. I said a little bit at the beginning how it helped form my vocation, because it really did see how important it was to understand why Jesus was quiet, in a certain sense. What was at stake? The wrong thinking of both the Sanhedrin and Pilate. The wrong thinking of Pilate focuses on the wrong way of doing politics. The wrong thinking of the Sanhedrin focuses on the wrong way of doing theology. Both are so key. True Catholicism being the answer that Jesus was trying to establish, obviously, in the world and through this, the great drama, his offering of his sacrifice. The fact that he was quiet is key. It would be, forget somewhere where she focuses on that, his quietness. He highlights the fact that if Jesus were to be complaining or trying to get himself out, he would be more like the condemned prisoner that probably most of us, you and I, would be. If you had a chance to escape an execution, you would take it, you know, or you'd just be complaining that this is unfair. Get me out of here. Most of us would. You know, we've seen many scenes of hangings or executions where maybe somebody is rescued at the last minute. There's can't remember what movie that was in, but there was a guy being executed by hanging, but the good guy comes around and shoots an arrow and hits the rope, cuts the rope so the guy falls. There's a scene in the movie For Greater Glory when little the saint, was it Jose de Rio, a boy saint who was captured by the Federalistas during the Cristero movement, and the general in charge of the Cristero movement at that time takes a liking to the little boy. The boy is a faithful Catholic, and he's captured, and the general goes to try to catch him. Fortunately, he's just late. He misses. They do kill Jose del Rio, and that sense of so Jesus was not the reluctant person executed. He was quiet, and he didn't fight it at this time. This was the time when he was in control, and he gave it up because, let us say, he was going to try to escape. If he said, "No, I'm going to complain," it would certainly dissipate, if not eliminate, the idea that I'm offering my life for the salvation of the world. If Jesus would have escaped, and he actually says, I could have escaped. Don't you think I could call on a legion of angels to fight for me? And so his silence is itself an indication that this is part of the plan of redemption. I'm doing this. I'm in control here. You're not in control. That's another thing that Jesus Christ Superstar kind of gets right in this. Let's go back here a little bit here for what else do
He's
we have?
He's a sad little man, not a king or god, not a thief. I need a crime. Behold your shattered king. You hypocrites, you hate us more than him.
That's a really great line there. You hypocrites, you hate us more than him. And that's often the focus. In the political world, a lot of our anger is directed to our political enemies. And yet we miss the fact that getting religion wrong is as important, if not more important, than getting politics right. That they need to go together. You hypocrites, you hate us more than him. He's recognizing, wait a minute, you shouldn't hate him so much. He's been a great preacher, and a lot of you like him, but you're going to abandon that priority of good theology, good devotion, good religion, because you're against a certain political stand. This reminds me of those Catholics who would they hate a political adversary. Let's say the liberal Catholic or non-Catholic, believer or non-believer, hates a certain political candidate, shall we say. And so we're going to we hate that political figure so much that we're willing to ignore the true religion, the true principles of religion. I hate this candidate so much, even though I'm a professed believer, even though I'm a professed Catholic or Christian, I'm willing to downgrade my understanding of Christianity, Catholicism, to include such things as the right to abortion or to abandon the idea of moral principles about marriage and sexual morality, right? I'm willing to. I hate the political opposition more than I hate wrong theology. We need to hate wrong theology, wrong moral principles, those who are blinded by a hatred for a candidate. Are falling into that trap. And Pilate calls it out beautifully. Wait a minute. You hate Rome more than you hate him. You shouldn't hate Rome, and you shouldn't hate him, Pilate could almost say. So that's a powerful little twist there. Let's take our final break here. I'm Father Tom Coys on The Winds of Change on AM 750.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, invites you to journey with Christ here at St. Stan's during the Holy Triduum, Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and Easter Sunday. Visit ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. for the complete schedule of Triduum worship. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
For 150 years, St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy has been an oasis that builds a moral foundation for your child based upon Catholic faith, virtue, and valor, along with strong academic preparation for children pre-kindergarten through 8th grade. Here's how you can help St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy and have a good time. Come out and play for St. Stan's Academy during the annual Casino Night Fundraiser, Saturday, April 25th at 6 p.m. Enjoy casino games, food, drinks, and great music, all while helping to support St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy, Saturday, April 25th at 6 p.m. Now, you must be 21 or over. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is located at 1255 North Noble in Chicago. That's 1 block north on Noble, off Division, just off the Kennedy.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening to The Winds of Change. I'm Father Tom Coyes. Running out of time here. Got to get at least this part of the dialogue again. I think this Jesus Christ Superstar scene gets a lot of it right, and it focuses on this terrible issue of the relationship between church and state. It goes like this. Let's see. Hang on.
Where are you from, Jesus? What do you... Where are you from, Jesus? What do you want, Jesus? Tell me. You've got to be careful. You could be dead soon. Could well be. Why do you not speak when I hold your life in my hands? How can you stay quiet? I don't believe you understand.
You have nothing in your hands. Any power you have comes to you from far beyond. Everything is fixed, and you can't change it.
Oh, Jesus Christ, how can I help you?
I have crucified him, crucified him, and the Caesar. You have a duty to keep the peace, so crucify him. Remember Caesar, you'll be demoted, you'll be deported, crucify him.
I really think that captures a real important part of the drama for us. It shows Pilate's trying to help Jesus, but Jesus is the one in control, and it really is. I'm glad they captured that line of Jesus. You have no power. Any power you have comes to you from far beyond. Everything is fixed, and you can't change it. Jesus is in control, even though he seems like he's most out of control, right? He's accomplishing the redemptive act of sacrifice. And the Jewish Sanhedrin should appreciate the true meaning of sacrifice because they sacrifice all the time in the temple, and their sacrifice of animals over and over again. They should appreciate the reality that killing an animal, it's an indirect sacrifice. It's not self-sacrifice. It's sacrificing someone or something else for your benefit, I guess. The only reason it is self-sacrifice is because an animal cost you something. it's similar to offering money in the collection basket versus giving up a sin or enduring a tough relationship, accepting mistreatment by others. So that's a powerful point of the story here too. Before we run out of time here too, I put this in the context of the dialogue that Nefarious, from that movie, that of the condemned prisoner that's possessed. This is a great scene. I hope we have a little, can see. He's trying to explain to the atheistic psychologist the plan of the demons, and the demons think that they're going to win when they get Jesus crucified, but they're thwarted because they don't understand the real meaning of self-sacrifice out of love for others, as it were. Do you remember this scene? Let's see if I can get this here.
You small words.
He's going to explain to James Martin, the psychologist, the history of the angelic fall and their plan, or why they are rebellious.
Try and keep up. In the first moment of creation, our creation, long before what you call the universe existed, we contemplated ourselves, our own being.
Ourselves meaning what, the angels?
That would be the most correct term, though I despise it. But yes, beings of pure spirit, spirit endowed with will.
Beings of pure spirit, beings endowed with free will. This, my friends, is the theological, philosophical issue of will is crucial in our society today, captured especially in the perverted idea of free choice or freedom of choice. Keep that concept in mind as Nefarious is here is going to explain the rebellion of the angels against God because of a different view of the will. It's one of the reasons why I'm on a personal crusade to re-establish the old act of contrition, where the new act of contrition that so many of our students are learning today are saying, not the new act of contrition, instead of saying, "Oh my God, I'm heartily sorry for having offended you," says, "I'm sorry for choosing wrong." I'm sorry for choosing to do wrong. Now, that introduction of the word choose is obviously related to the concept of the free will. And I am sure that those who wrote the new act of contrition were reacting to the old sense of, oh, you mean you're sinning even if you're not willing it? And you could say, yeah, that's a problem. And so they corrected it. They thought they were correcting it, but they created a new problem. Anyways, let's listen here as he goes on.
We soon became aware of another will, an immensely powerful will, one we came to realize as our origin.
God?
The enemy.
That's a great line.
My master understood by endowing us with a will, we have the right to self-determination, that by giving us a will and its desires of our own, we're entitled to be free. Whereas the enemy insisted that by creating us, he was entitled to eternal gratitude, worship, and forced servitude. In a word, James, slavery to his will.
That seems kind of unfair.
Immensely unfair. Why give a will only to say you can't use it? He made us.
That's a great. What good is will if you can't use it? But the demon there was. We're upset that our will has to coincide with the will of God. Well, I hope that draws you into the Triduum. I hope you can make it to a good Holy Thursday, Good Friday, Easter Saturday, the Vigil, and Easter Sunday. God bless you all. I'm Father Tom Coys. You've been listening to The Winds of Change on AM 750.
What did you say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide.